Well, it's been a quiet week in Lake Wobegon, Minnesota, my home out there on the edge of the prairie. It's been cold out there. It was 1 below 0 here the other day, and everybody felt pretty good about that. Everybody was pretty happy about it, as you could tell by all the complaining that went on at the Chatterbox Cafe. We need something to complain about. It's our art form, and people did a great job talking about winter and how they hate it and how this is going to be their last one. And I tell you, if these people all moved to Florida or Hawaii, what would they have to talk about? Nothing. That's what. So everybody felt good. Kenny was up at the Sidetrack Tap on Tuesday. He was sitting at the bar and he was playing one tune over and over and over again on the jukebox, Third Rate Romance, Low Rent Rendezvous by the Amazing Rhythm Aces, just one after the other. Wally looked at him over the bar and said, "Slow down. Slow down, Kenny." But Kenny kept going, and then he staggered out the door. He was 3 sheets to the wind, and he headed up McKinley Street and over to Oak Street, and he walked through that vacant lot there that they keep meaning to turn into a playground, but the kids already have. And he walked through that vacant lot where the kids had built snow tunnels. And he walked up on a crust of snow, and he dropped into a snow tunnel. And because the crust of the snow had frozen hard, he was trapped there, and he couldn't get out. He stood there and was waving his arms. And I tell you, if he had fallen into that tunnel at night, he would have died. Nobody would have been aware of him. So one more good reason to get drunk at 2 in the afternoon... The constables, Gary and Leroy, saw him waving his arms there, and they walked over and they heisted him out, and they escorted him back to the Sidetrack Tap to point out to him that his car was parked there in front of the Sidetrack Tap, and why not take your car and go home rather than walk up that way, which isn't even in the direction that you live, Kenny. That vacant lot is in the opposite. Well, what had happened, you see, was that he walked out of the Sidetrack Tap at 2 in the afternoon, and this lovely young woman came running up to him and threw her arms around him and said, "Uncle Jimmy, it's me, Amanda. Remember me?" Well, his name is not Jimmy, but it was such a wonderful thing to have her in his arms that he sort of turned his face away, and he said, "Of course I remember you." But then she saw his face and she said, "Oh, I've got the wrong person. I'm so sorry." And she went running off. And that's what made him forget that his car was right there and he lived off in that direction and not in the way that he wandered across the wind-crusted snow and fell down into that tunnel over there. Just lucky for him, it was at 2 in the afternoon, because if it had been in the evening, his wife Ardis was not at home, and so there was nobody to notice that he was not there. You see, Ardis goes off on Tuesday nights to the women's circle, and they met in the Lutheran church basement on that particular Tuesday night. The women's circle is a continuation of what used to be the quilters' circle, and they used to meet and they would make quilts and they would roll bandages, and they also baked hot dish for funerals. Well, they still do some of the funeral hot dishes, but they don't quilt anymore. There just didn't seem to be a point to it. Everybody had 2 or 3 quilts already, and there was no need for anymore. And quilting can turn into a kind of a show-offy sort of a thing, and women using really dazzling colors and silver thread in your quilt and quilting letters on there that don't come from scripture, writing things like "snuggle up, honey," and so they gave that up and they became a writing circle. It was somebody's idea that they would get together and they would write. And once these mostly Lutheran women, some Catholic women, discovered the great pleasure of using fiction to get out your own feelings that you would hesitate to say directly to anybody else, it became a writer's circle, and they gathered together, just women, no men, just women, and just women who were invited. Some people suggested that Pastor Liz be invited, and they put it to a vote by ballot, and only one was in favor. 15 opposed. Because, you see, it started out, they were writing, you know, poems about how good Jesus has been to me and sort of heartwarming memories of childhood. And then somebody wrote something dark, and they all kind of got the bug. And Irene Bunsen wrote a story about a woman who was a stripper in a truck stop on Saturday nights, and then she came and she sang in the Lutheran church choir on Sunday mornings, and she wore her little bikini with the little tassels underneath her choir robe, and nobody knew about it. And Margaret Johnson was going to write some sonnets about her children, and then it just got away from her, and she didn't want to rhyme them anymore. They just became long, kind of free verse, long lists of complaints about the self-absorption of people in their 20s. Where did all that come from? And somebody else wrote a story about a woman detective who helped people find their lost relatives. And she found all these ne'er-do-wells and all these criminals, and the people she described resembled her husband's relatives. Anybody could see that. An artist, Kenny's wife, wrote a story about a woman who was planning to poison her husband by putting rat poison into tater tot hot dish, which was his favorite. And Kenny read it. He read it. He found it around the house. And it just broke him up. He sat down to dinner that night, and she had made tater tot hot dish. And he had two whole big heaping helpings. And he said, you know, you mean so much to me. I don't know what I would ever do without you, darling. You make tater tot hot dish. This is my favorite. You know it's my favorite. I absolutely love it. I don't know what I'd do without you. He sat there at the table, and he cried. Artists did not cry. She pushed the hot dish toward him and said, have some more. So, I was lucky he went through the snow when he did. Otherwise he might have died. Now, when he was standing there, trapped, he heard a voice from down in the tunnel. And it was a man's voice, and it was very quiet, almost a whisper. And it just said, be happy. Things could be worse. Be content. Well, now, Kenny has lived in Lake Wobegon all of his life. Maybe that's his problem. Maybe that's why it meant so much to him when that beautiful young woman ran up and threw her arms around him. She represented a life he could have had if he'd moved away and did not marry his high school sweetheart, if he'd gone off somewhere. He could have met somebody like her. But this voice said, be happy. Things could be worse. And because he'd lived in Lake Wobegon all his life, he knew that this vacant lot was where the Morrow House used to be. It was from this house that Bobby Morrow went off to World War II and came back suffering from shell shock and did not want anyone to see him that way. So he did not come back to Lake Wobegon. He settled in Texas, and he sent a note to his brother Buddy, who lived in the house with their old parents, saying that there was treasure. He had buried money in the backyard. Buddy dug up that backyard. He dug it up at night, and he spaded it up, every square foot of it, and never found anything. And then he covered it over with a sort of a plastic grass tarp so the people wouldn't see. And then the next day he dug some more. But of course people saw. And his neighbor, Art Munson, took pity on him. And he told Buddy that his dog had come home with a shoe that he'd dug up somewhere, maybe from the backyard of the Morrow house, and it had $50 in it. Well, Buddy accepted it, but it wasn't enough for him, you see, because now he had imagined an enormous fortune buried in the backyard, and he suspected Art Munson of cheating on him and of having kept the rest, maybe thousands of dollars. And that's when he locked his doors and pulled his shades, and he retreated from the world. He was still digging in the backyard for years after that, but nobody ever went into the Morrow house again. He filled it up with piles of junk, garbage bags, shopping bags, full of stuff. You couldn't understand how he could even move in there. Somebody got in once, and it was just impossible. It was just stuffed thick with things. This man who believed there was a treasure in his backyard, Art Munson, brought him a cement block with three little tin cans jammed into the holes of it. And in each tin can, there were 50 silver dollars. But that wasn't enough for Buddy Munson. He thought there was more, somewhere more. And he went on believing that there was more. He was an angry, embittered old man, thinking there was more somewhere that he'd been cheated of, until the house burned down one night, full of stuff. And they dragged him out, but he suffered from terrible smoke inhalation, and he was no longer able to talk and make sense. So his sister came up from Georgia, and she took him down there. He died a few years ago. Kenny knew all of this story, and here was Buddy in the snow tunnel. He told Gary and Leroy, so I think there's somebody in there, and they broke apart the snow tunnel, and there was nobody there. He walked around. He felt chastened by this experience. He felt suddenly very, very sober, Kenny. And there he saw written in the snow the word penis. The fifth graders have had their sex education unit, and they've been writing words in the snow all over town. The word penis was written in yellow, so it was written by a boy. He wiped it out with his foot. He walked around town. He saw the word boobs in somebody's front yard. He put fresh snow on it, protect the children from all of this. He walked around back of the Lutheran church, and there were all these horrible words in the snow. He was trying to wipe them out with his shoe, and that's where Pastor Liz saw him. She was working on her sermon. She was sitting in her kitchen, and she saw Kenny out there in his old brown coveralls and his yellow parka, and repaired with pieces of duct tape, and his old dirty baseball cap. She looked at him out there. She was just writing her sermon about Jesus calling his apostles and how he called the 12. He just walked around and he met these people. They were just hanging around. And he'd say to one now and then, he'd just say, "Follow me." And some of them did. And they just followed him. And that's how he chose. There was no nationwide contest, you know. There were no application forms. You didn't have to write an essay or anything. You know, there wasn't a competitive examination or anything. It wasn't a big contest where they narrowed it down to 12. He just said, "You and you and you and you." And she looked at Kenny and she thought, you know, Jesus could have called him. He could have. Jesus called people just like him. Well, she was moved by that. She was moved by that because she remembered last summer, when she was so discouraged, she wrote a letter of resignation to the council, all the reasons she wanted to quit the pastorate and go find someplace else. She wrote this long letter. She was staying up at her friend Sharon's lake cabin up in Watab Lake up in Stearns County, and she wrote this long letter of accusations, and it felt so good. She had to go in for root canal. She had some tooth problem, and the dentist had given her a pain pill, and she took a pain pill. And she finished this and looked at it and felt good. She'd gotten it off her chest. And she decided to go swimming. She went swimming naked in the lake, and she was going to swim across the lake. And she got about out to the middle, and the sky turned dark, and a storm started to come up. She could feel rain falling on her head and her shoulders, and she turned to swim back towards the cabin. And then suddenly, the pain pill took effect. And she felt numb, and she felt perfectly calm, floating in the water. And how easy it would be just to let go and to die. It would be so easy, the easiest thing in the world. And then from nearby, a loon made its cry. Beautiful, high, warbling cry. The cry of pure life, just pure life. That's what it was. And she swam to shore and decided to live and resume her calling. As we should too. That's the news from Lake Wobegon, where all the women are strong, all the men are good looking, and all the children are above average.